Welcome, college basketball fans, to the Full Court Press Podcast with LT and Sammy D. This is the podcast that brings you legendary stories from college basketball's golden era and dives in deep with a current analysis of today's game. Get ready for the most energetic and entertaining college basketball podcast around. Let's get it.
Hello, and welcome to another Full Court Press Podcast, a college basketball experience. Luke Taylor here, back in the saddle again. We got a great episode coming up. Welcome, Samuel Davidson, to another Full Court Press Podcast, a college basketball experience.
What's up, LT? How's it going?
I don't know which program I'm more excited for with the hiring, whether it's Louisville and Pat Kelsey or Kentucky with Mark Pope. I enjoyed both of the press conferences.
Yeah, I mean, the college basketball landscape is wild right now. You'd think this is kind of the calm season, but it's quite the opposite. I mean, how many times have we talked with coaches where they're like, yeah, I mean, it's their last game was a couple weeks ago or a month ago, whatever it was, but all they're focused on is roster management right now, right?
Yeah, and I can't get people to jump on their podcast because they're busy trying to get players. I mean, I don't fault them.
No, I mean, it's there's been so much movement the past couple weeks, and I feel like that's going to be the norm. The next couple months as these rosters get put together. The coaching carousel, it's just a domino effect. And, you know, we've seen it over and over again each year. But now you throw in the transfer portal and NIL to these conversations. And, it's just wild out there. It's a nonstop job to just keep track of what's going on.
You know what song it makes me really want to hear?
What's that?
I don't know if you know the song. Busta Rhymes was underappreciated. He a big dude too.
I think he's getting his flowers now. I mean, he's obviously a legend. But we talk a lot about the coaching carousel and all that. But the guest we have on today's episode,
Time out. Not there yet. We're not there yet.
I'm excited.
Wait, I know you are. As am I. But we got to do two things. First thing. If you love the podcast, you like the podcast, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. Follow us on all the freaking handles and all that shit, social media. 5-star reviews. That's all I care about. I've been drinking a lot of dairy. I will come to your house if you don't give us a 5-star review.
Do you have the latest review that we got? That was a great 5-star review.
Yeah, that was. Did you write it?
A couple days ago.
Did you write it? I didn't write it either. Well, you never know. You know, that's what people do. I mean, we've both written our ones. Okay, so I'll get it for you. Oh, and don't forget to subscribe to this YouTube channel. So we got one from Ridiculica Patronus. So hearing these guys' opinions on March Madness 2024 and coaching style was epic. If you like basketball, this is a must add to your playlist. Great contact and audio is fantastic. One thing that is special about this podcast is they really are descriptive and give details on insight to teams. So even if you're not a big sports fan, it will make you one. Great chemistry, great overall podcast. Boom!
Sounds like your mother wrote that.
No, because my mother's British and she's very proper. She's going to use some of those words, let's be honest.
And she probably let me not have something phone in her handle.
No. All right. Are you more excited for Louisville or Kentucky right now?
All honesty, I'm more excited about Louisville. I mean, there's a bigger program to turn around there. You know, it's not like Kentucky. It's like they still had a decent year. You know, Louisville, it was just a really bad year. You know, and you know, moving from that, I guess there's more room for improvement there, right? And I like it. You know, and I'm more excited about that. The Kentucky hire, I don't like how it came down to Coach Pope. You know, I think that there was a lot of rumors, and you know, I'm sure some of them were accurate and valid about the other offers that were put out there to different coaches. And you have a blue blood program like Kentucky. You know, when coaches are turning down that program. Two, three, maybe four coaches actually turned down the offer before they offered it to Pope. it's there's just this shift, you know, in what's happening with Kentucky basketball and what's accepted and not accepted. And, so yeah, I mean, I didn't really like seeing that they had to go through three or four guys. Like, that's not the college basketball Kentucky Wildcats that we've grown up and known. But yeah, I mean, Louisville, I think that, you know, I think you and I've talked about it. I know we've talked about it, throughout the past year that, you know, with the right coach, I mean, that program, is set up for success. Right. So yeah.
I like both hires. The one thing I don't like is the transfer portal is over 1600 players. I mean, now what's going to happen is people are going to come to Kentucky that might not have transferred, and Louisville per se.
Sure.
And it's kind of a shit show. And this next guest actually talked about it. So this is a good transition.
And I'll let you segment into the guest.
No, you go ahead.
No, I'm just excited. I mean, Frank Martin's been on our radar all year.
You're not supposed to say his name. You're supposed to say a sentence or two about the guest, and then you say the name.
You already did. You already teed me up. And I, like I said, man, I'm eager to get this podcast, this episode started, because Frank Martin has been on our radar throughout the year. You know, we both admire and respect him, his coaching style, you know, having that kind of old school mentality.
Won the right way, competed and won the right way. Hard,
sure. Absolutely,
you know, loyal. You can just tell he's not a jumper. He doesn't recruit kids and sugarcoat shit. I mean, none of these kids get in trouble. I mean, how many kids can you remember of Coach Martin's? Kind of like Bobby Knight's. How many of those kids got in trouble?
Well, I mean, there's this. I mean, he talks about his high school coaching background. I do think that plays into how some of these coaches, they marry discipline, basketball, and just building relationships with young men, right? And it all kind of comes together into like how they put their blueprint on a university's men's basketball program. But we've been following Coach Martin for a long time, you know, and it's, and I mean, I love what he's done with the teams that he's coached for. We were both in Conference USA when he was an assistant coach for Bob Huggins at Cincinnati. And then when Huggins took the job at K-State, Coach Kansas Martin fans followed him. And then Coach Martin ended up taking over that head coaching vacancy and became an instant success. I don't want to say instant success because I know it takes a lot, but it's, I mean, and he said he doesn't like the word recruiting, but man, he's a hell of a recruiter.
Yeah. When he said Michael Beasley, I'm like, that guy was a ball player. And Jacob Pullen, I mean, he had some ball players.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at who he's coached over the years, I mean, he coached Udonis Haslem and Steve Blake with that North Miami high school, the Stingeries, you know, and, you know, then you move on to who played for him at Cincinnati and then K-State. Like, I mean, Michael Beasley's arguably, you know, one of a top 10 college basketball players since, you know, the 2000, you know, so it's... like, I mean, his career speaks for itself. The players who he's coached, I mean, represent who he is and his success. So, I mean, like I said, I mean, he's one of those guys that is synonymous with college basketball coaching. And it's an honor to have him on the podcast.
Yep. So that, I think that's enough. I think we should just go to the podcast, the episode with Coach Frank Martin, head coach at the University of Massachusetts, the Minutemen. I'm sometimes called a Minuteman, but not in this reference. But anyway, enjoy and keep listening and watching to the Full Court Press Podcast, a college basketball experience. Woo-haw! Get you all in check.
Let's get it, LT.
Hello and welcome to another Full Court Press podcast. We got someone really good. His birth name is Francesco Jose Martin, simply known as Coach Frank Martin. He has a BS from FIU, a Bachelor of Science, but I feel like he's been kicking ass and taking names ever since he burst on the basketball scene. Coach Martin, welcome to the Full Court Press podcast, a college basketball experience.
Hey, is it me or is this ball cap make my head look really big? Looks like Looks like I got a little peewee ball cap on right now.
You're asking that me ball? That? You see how big my head is?
Yeah, that ball cap looks like it's got some paint on. Like, you've been busy, huh?
I used to be a third baseman. Like, this, like, your doggy hat right here, man. Like, you know, you sweat through it and you get three hits. You don't change your hat. You keep that same ball cap on.
Oh, my God. Yeah, so, Coach, we can either – here's your choice. Let's see where we want to go. Do you want to talk about kids' basketball parents? Do you want to talk about NIL? Do you want to talk about the transfer portal or conference realignment? No. Or how about conference realignment? You want to talk about that one?
Why don't we talk about, like, what life used to be like? That's I'm your modern old day.
I'm all about that. You know, coach. I mean, you have seen so much transition happen in your career, right? Yeah. But specifically in a role like a head coach in Division I men's basketball. I mean, what the last 4 or 5 years, like, I don't think we've seen so many just changes. Or, I mean, have you changed your model or you're thinking on anything, or how's that working with you?
Yeah. By the way, I'm just joking, trying to have some fun, because the last the last 5-6 weeks have been really complicated from the world that we're in right now. But we can talk about whatever you guys want to talk about. I'm no, fair no, game. Good. I don't hide from conversations. the biggest adjustment I've had to make is, you know, as coaches, we always, you know, we recruit these guys and listen, there are so many sins that are committed by players and coaches behind the scenes that if 1/1,000,000th of those stories ever went public, nobody would respect what we do. But that's the reality of every life. Like we protect our families. We, you know, being a dad, man, there's no book that tells you how to be a father. You got to figure that one out. Being a coach, man, leadership. You go to a bookstore, there's unlimited number of books for leadership and none of them work. Like, you don't, like, you're in a moment with a certain individual. You don't go to the book and go to chapter 6, you know, like in when you're an attorney, you go to a bylaw, whatever, previous case. And all right, right, we're going to move forward based on this. Man, whatever happens in your journey has nothing to do with leadership with someone else's journey. So it's complicated. So to answer your question, the biggest adjustment that I've had to make, I'm not a transactional person. I'm a relationship person. I'm into education. I've been in education for 41 years. When I started coaching, this word brought and I have become friends. We're both high school coaches. I lived in the neighborhood of the high school I coached at, which is the same neighborhood that I grew up in. I never left the neighborhood. If I did wrong by a kid, I didn't have to worry about some guy on some podcast talking about me. I didn't have to worry about ESPN putting me on blast on SportsCenter 11 o'clock at night. Somebody knocked on my door and said, "Yo, Frank, really, man? Like, you and I have known each other. You and I have known each other for 30 years. Really? This is what we're doing?" No. And that's the reality of real life, not the phoniness of public, you know, whatever opinion you want to create. And I've never deviated from that. Well, the present moment, even the people that like you, you get along with and are happy with you, want to transfer. Like, I just had a conversation with a couple players. I'm not mad at young people that want to go find out if there's something better out there. I'm mad at the system that us adults have created that doesn't allow young people to understand the values that you need to succeed in life. They all start with relationship. None. Money comes and goes. Relationships are what life's all about. Here, I'll leave you with one more, because I still value relationships. All this transferring stuff that appears to be sexy and everyone trying to whatever. Like, when these kids transfer schools 3 and 4 years, let's hit fast forward now 15 years. Let's say God blesses them and they're a father. Where are they taking their child to and say, "This is your dad's home"? Where?
Right.
None of those schools are claiming them. They can go to school A, B, and C, and no one's paying attention to them. And you're like with your kid and you're like, "Yeah, I played here." Well, shoot, no one knows anything about you. Why? Because you were a mercenary. That's where you were viewed. And it's unfortunate, man. It's sorry for the long answer. We were laughing and joking, but this is real. This is the moment that we're all trying to manage right now.
So we're a little bit different in our kind of approach and our background. So we're both former D1 athletes. I was a head coach in another sport, played a little basketball back in the day, but still. So we understand kind of what goes on in the world, like at every sport. It's not just basketball. It's football. It's tennis. It's golf. Recruiting has always been interesting. Let's be honest. Okay.
Yep.
What some people do and what they don't do and what have you. We have coaches and players every week on the podcast like yourself. And the biggest thing what people have kind of talked about is the transfer portal. Not one coach is pissed at a player trying to better themselves. You know the situation some of these kids come into. If they can make a little bit of extra money, you can't fault them, right?
Right.
The problem is they're not looking at big picture. They're not, like you're saying, they're not looking 10, 15 years down the road. I mean, coach, let's be honest. Look at the fans, for instance, some of these kids. They don't bloody know who's on these teams half the time. So there's no brand development or loyalty or anything like that. And the NCAA just has to come in and do something. That's the biggest thing. I mean, for all the time in non-revenue sports, you could transfer without any penalty, correct? One-time transfer, you can play right away. But basketball and football, you always had to sit out. Now, you see guys who are – we've interviewed guys 26 years old, I swear to God, and they're like at their seventh school.
It's embarrassing. That's not what college athletics are all about. And no, but here's one thing I will say about the whole transferring thing. Like, I'm an employee. I'm under contract. I don't go to my boss and say, hey, I'm going to put my name out there and see if there's a better opportunity for me. Like, you do that, you're getting fired on the spot and you get terminated with cause and you lose whatever money the school owes you. If when coaches leave, they already know that's their job. They've got another. I told my oldest son, he asked me about transferring mid-year when he was USC Upstate. So I called, you know, he called me, said, Dad, I'm not happy. I want to transfer. I said, okay, I got it. I transferred. I get it. I said, but I got to ask you something. Where are you going? He said, I don't know. I said, well, let me give you a word of advice as a young person that's trying to be a man one day. Don't ever quit your job if you don't have another job. Mm-hmm. And he got mad at me. He's like, I'm your son. You don't have my back. I said, no, I got your back forever. You don't have to worry about that one. But you need to understand this. If you walk away from a scholarship and you don't get a scholarship, I'm not paying your bills. You're getting a job. You're paying for school, but I'm not paying for school. And he got mad at me because part of the reasons he wanted to transfer it, he created some of the problems. So he had to go back and own his mistakes. You know what happened at the end of the year? He owned them. He made amends. His coach respected him because of it. When the season ended, he came to me. He said, Dad, I still want to transfer. I said, all right, now I can help you. And we went about our business and he learned a valuable lesson and he made right. And instead of running away from problems that he had something to do with, he created allies in the coaches that were in that program because of how he handled the difficult moment. And at the end of the day, relationships is what matters in life. When we stop flapping our wings, because we're always flapping our wings, chasing our dreams, eventually we get tired. And when we stop flapping our wings, we got to be able to go home. We don't just land wherever and say, all right, this is my new home. When we stop flapping our wings, we go home. Where are these kids going home to? What is home? Because that's they the don't problem, get right? to like ever experience home when you live in four different houses. You don't have a home. You're a vagabond when you do that. And that's the world that we're creating.
Mm-hmm. So you talk about like the relationship aspect of it as well. So I want to like a player like Rasul Diggins, who like I'm a big fan of, really came into his own this past year. Like I think 1 or 2 weeks ago, he made the announcement he's coming back to UMass, and the media takes it as, oh, it's because of this NIL deal that UMass put together, the Massachusetts Collective. Like how much of that, like how much of those conversations are you directly involved in with a player like Rasul, who, you know, like in as well as like other players that have entered the portal or who you're looking to recruit from the portal, like how involved are you in this?
Hey, Sam, just wait. Hey, just wait a second, coach. I would be scared shitless to go into his office and tell him I'm transferring.
No, that's what I'm saying.
It's I'm like, just being honest.
So that, cause there, no, there's some coaches that are like of Coach Martin's like generation who like has that reputation, you know, where it's like, as a parent, you want your kid playing for a guy like Coach Martin. Right. But like as a player, like you're like, okay, like this might be a little scary to go into his office and ask for advice or saying like, hey, I'm thinking about entering the portal. I know it's one thing with a son and a family member. But what about some of the players? Like has that dynamic changed?
I don't talk numbers. I'm not in control of the money. And if I could control the Mass Collective, the numbers that I helped them raise money, but I'm not controlling the numbers. And even if I was in control of what number the Mass Collective wants to give each player, like it's not contracted. So if I tell Rasul, hey, Rasul, I'm going to give you 50 to stay in college. Okay. By October 15th, now he's like, well, I want 60 or I ain't running those drills in practice anymore. I'm like, yo. So I'm like, I'm not buying. I've got a line. I've been using this line in recruiting because to your point earlier, crazy stuff has always happened in recruiting. This isn't a new chapter. But it's a line I always use in recruiting because it's a line I learned. When you come from nothing, you comprehend this. If you allow yourself to get bought, don't complain when you get sold. So I'm not buying people. I'm going to help people. I invest of me into people. And in that investment, now that's real. So now when Rasul, the season ends, and he's got all these people talking to him, about, well, this and this and that, and, you know, money here and whatever. You know what him and his parents sat down and said? Well, Rasul, your career was in the dumps, and the guy that believed in you was Frank, and the reason that you've changed your career now is because of Frank and UMass. That's worth a lot more money long-term than a couple extra bucks right now. And that's a decision they make. That don't mean everyone should make that decision. That's you ask Rasul, I'm giving you the answer. And then Rasul comes into my office, and the only thing he talks to me about is the relationship, not the money.
Good.
Now, I started fighting for NIL in 2010 when I had a guy named Jacob Pullen. I started.
Yeah, Jacob Pullen. Man,
he had a beard, and, yep. And he took the country by storm with Fear the Beard.
Yep.
They were selling shirts in town with his face and a beard. The NCAA came in and said, you guys can't sell. He wasn't making money. The NCAA came in and told the different stores in our town in Manhattan, Kansas, you guys can't sell that because it shows his face. I was like, wait a second. How do you control that? You don't own these kids. And I started the process. Like, we got to stop being so greedy and so arrogant. And we have to figure out a way to allow these young people to market themselves and benefit from it. I started arguing this behind the scenes. The problem is that you don't control individuals in a free market. You don't. And there's no control you can go. There's nothing you can do there. But we've entered the transfer as many times as you can rule, along with the NIL rule, along with, this is the biggest one. This is the one that's the hardest one to manage, in my opinion. I can no longer help players deal with inconsistencies academically or off the court. So if you choose not to go to class, I used to bring you in and flip this big tractor trailer, like this big tractor trailer tire in our indoor facility. I'd sit in a chair and players, whoever didn't go to class, they'd flip that tire up and down. And they'd say, how long? I said, till I get tired of watching you.
Wow. But deja vu, coach. This is deja vu.
Yeah. And you know, and I used to do that. My strength coach and I would do that. Not in the mornings. I'm a dad to my kids in the morning. I had young kids at the time. We do it Thursday and Friday nights at 10 o'clock at night. You know why? Because I'm an old fart.
You're an asshole.
Yeah.
He's already put his kids to sleep.
They've gone to sleep. I'm an old fart. I'm married. I got no social life. So I'm going to sit in that.
Now.
And now you're going to go flip that tire rather than go hang out with your boys or your girlfriend. So now when you're done, you're going to come to me. I'm going to hug you. I'm going to dap you up. I'm like, have a conversation. Like, dude, I don't want to be here. Why are you making me do this? But we all have a responsibility for the academic component of what you signed up for. I didn't sign up for it. You signed up for it. It's my job. I signed up to teach you how to be held accountable for all your responsibilities, not just part of them. And now guys go to class. You know what I've never had an issue with? Academics. Now I got guys telling me like, hey, I ain't going to class. I'm like, hey, what do you mean you're not going to class? And I can't do anything about it. And that's
ridiculous.
So now my job is on the line if I don't play my best players. So if my best player don't go to class and I bench him, I'm going to say he's got a bad toe or some crap because I'm not trying to throw him under the bus. But in reality, I'm getting fired if I don't play my best players. And if you hold them accountable, then they leave because we've not allowed the system that we've created doesn't allow for us to hold young people accountable to grow. And everyone thinks growth is about happy and high five. Hey, let's hug. Man, growth. Like you guys are athletes. How much fun is the weight room?
It's not fun.
I don't go in the weight room anymore. We'll just say that much.
Well, I still do. Don't ask me why. It's embarrassing. The weight I move around at 58 years old is embarrassing. I'm embarrassed with those 20-pound dumbbells. But my joints hurt so bad, I can't stress my muscles. But the weight room's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Getting underneath 300 pounds for the first time, that's not fun. But the only way you ever get to 350 is if you overcome 300. And that's challenging, and it takes – like persistence and effort and all kinds of stuff. And so I don't know. I'm drawing you guys into a different conversation, but it's this is nuts.
Coach, no offense. This is what we deal in a life to life basis with our different businesses. So what drives me nuts is what are we creating, right? Because 5-10 years down the road, this is going to be our replacements, our workforce. And all right, well, shit hits the fan. We'll just go somewhere else. And you can do that right now. So in your case, if you get pissy with a kid, for instance, some of your facial expressions when you used to coach at Kansas State.
I've gotten better. You got to admit, I've gotten better.
You have. I will give you that. I think with all your life experiences, with all your health experiences, you would hope you would relax a little bit. But you know what? I get it. You're from Miami. You're a fiery guy. You're old school. You're a freaking bouncer who got shot at. You've died. I mean, like, what do you expect? I'd hope you. I mean, Coach D has chilled out a little bit over the years. Now, Coach Hurley, on the other hand, needs to chill out a little bit.
Are you kidding me? Funny. That's my shining light. He's on the biggest platform. I hug him. Bob, Danny, come here, Danny, Bobby, because they're both the same.
For sure.
Was there a dad like that, Coach?
Say it again.
Was their dad like that intense?
My high school, I was a young assistant coach.
Yep.
Miami senior St. Anthony's developed a rivalry in the late 80s. And it started Bobby's senior year. And I'm 22 years old. I'm a young assistant coach, and I'm sitting on the bench. And my high school coach was just as intense. And I used to sit, and he was my high school coach that I worked for 9 years. And he lived in the neighborhood just like me. And he was like a father figure to all of us that didn't have a dad. And I sat on that bench, and I remember that game was in Kissimmee, Florida, 1987. Number one versus two in the country, St. Anthony's versus Miami Senior. All 10 players on the court that started the game were Division I players. And I'm sitting there, and the intensity from the two coaches, I was blown away. I was like, wow. Wow. And it was an incredible game. They beat us, but then we ended up playing each other like every year because Shaky Rodriguez and Bob Hurley Sr., out of that competition, developed an incredible amount of respect and a friendship. And so I've been a huge fan of the Hurleys. I knew Danny when he was a player. And then Danny became an assistant. He'd come down to Miami to recruit. And I didn't become a Hurley fan because of the boys' individual success as players or their successes as coaches. I became a Hurley fan because watching his dad coach basketball. And that has never that's never gone away. And I'm not surprised that they've both been as successful as they've been.
Yeah, we were at the Final Four, and Sam's always been a big Hurley fan. You know, Bobby and then Danny coaching too. And I saw it in person.
Also, just a St. Anthony's fan. I mean, what the guy?
Well, yeah, did, yeah. I mean, what he's done.
Senior just built, and like, I mean, he was high school basketball. He was the face of it for a couple decades.
Yeah. So I actually got to interview Coach Hurley Senior after winning the national championship, and then seeing Danny and how he. Like he'll be in the press conference and then he'll go outside just outside the press conference and be interviewed with reporters for 30 minutes and not rushing. I was really impressed, but I thought the funniest was, you know, he's going to Kentucky for $11 million a year. Did you hear that one, Coach?
Hey, so my grandmother taught me and all of us, cause she was the backbone of our family. Don't mess with happy. Appreciate what you have, not what you don't have. Why would Danny to go make a couple extra bucks? Why would you mess with happy? And but you know where he learned that?
You.
No. When he chose not to rotate defensively, even though he was Coach Hurley's son, he took an ass chewing and he was held accountable. And you know what he didn't do? He didn't move to a different house, and he didn't transfer to St. Benedict's. He stayed at St. Anthony's and took his medicine every day because there was a purpose to it. So he learned to appreciate what he does have. And now that he's an adult, think about this. You asked me about the problem we're creating. Okay. You guys okay if I ask you guys a question?
Yeah, bring it on.
Okay.
Be careful what the answer is going to be.
Well, because you said you were both college athletes, correct?
Yes.
Correct.
Okay. What was your salary your first year out of college, whether playing a sport or in a real job? What was your salary?
$37,000.
Okay.
I was a on-air sports anchor, general assignment news reporter in Iowa on Fox, and I was making $18,600.
Okay, here we go. So now follow my lead here. So if you guys have been given $100,000 your senior year in college, because you're a good athlete at that university. When that season ended, do you think the NIL people giving you any more money?
No.
No.
Okay. So now you get to living life as a 21, 22-year-old with $100,000 on your side. And you're like thinking like this is what life's all about. And now you got to go take a real job, whether it's playing, because very few people make the NBA now. Very few people are first-round picks. So now you got to take let's say you're lucky enough to play and you end up having to go to Hungary to make $42,000.
Yep.
And you were just making $100,000. You want to talk about mental health? Who's paying your bills then? Who are you calling to help you with your $100,000 habits and a $42,000 a year job overseas, or an $18,000. Let's say you're not good enough to play, which majority of guys aren't good enough to play post-college. And now you got to go take that great dude, man, that rotated on defense and the university loved you and you got a degree and you made $75,000 because you were an unbelievable teammate and you represented. But your first job out of college is making $18,000 at that radio station in Iowa.
TV station, thank you. TV station. I have a face for TV. I used to have a face for TV. Now I've got a face for radio.
How about this? I'm forced to be on TV. I mean, like, are you kidding me? But
it's Seth. Sam, it's Seth Greenberg.
Oh my God! Like seriously, I'm wearing a wig after that one.
I will say, following Coach Martin's career, it's like the different faces of Coach Martin. You know, from we were we started watching you when you were in Conference USA under Huggins at Cincinnati, and then you moved to K-State. And obviously, you know, the rest is history as you became a pretty quick national name. But it's like the different faces when you look up Coach Martin, you know, it's like, a lot of it's the same expression, but it's different colors on the shirt, but different haircut recently, obviously. But yeah, I mean, the problem that's created, I mean, it's like, I don't think young men are ready for some of the decisions that they're supposed to be making, especially after they've made probably the biggest decision of their life to that point of which program to go into after high school. And then, you know, the accountability aspect, it's, you know, guys just moving all over the place, chasing the money. I mean, it's hard from a fan's perspective as well. Right.
I'm going to interrupt you, but one of the things I started suggesting back in like 2011, 12, I started to advocate, we're in the world of education. Let's teach people how to succeed, like allow them to make some money. But don't give them the money when they're 18, 19 years old. They got no idea what they're doing. Let's teach them how to invest, put in some kind of fund. So while they're in college, they get X number of dollars. But as they go year to year to year, that money's growing. So then if they finish, like put a carrot at the end of the deal. So once they stay at school A, what at the end of 1 year, that's their money. They want to leave, they take it with them. But if they stay, they continue to keep that money in a fund. And if they graduate from your school, then you add a bonus on there at the end. So when they start life, they don't start life with $100,000 a year habits. They start life with $100,000 in the bank. So they can then take that $18,000 a year job and have some money to create the right habits when they're starting real life. There's so many ways that we can do this where we incorporate education and everyone benefits and we don't take advantage of what Jay Billis, free labor. Man, get out of here. Man, ain't no free labor. Like you know how much money? When we went to the Final Four in 17, they did a profile of the four teams in the Final Four. South Carolina ranked fourth of the four schools and how much money the school invested per men's basketball player.
Wow.
We invested $90,000 per player that was on our team that went to the Final Four. The number one was, I believe, was North Carolina, like at $126,000. How much money they invested per kid. Man, that's not free labor. Now, you might not like the way that money's being spent, and you might want to create a job to make that kind of money. That's a different conversation. But these kids weren't weren't being taken advantage of in free labor. There is no free labor here. There's compensation taking place. Now, you might not be happy with the compensation. You know, it's like when I was a kid, I had to go take out the garbage and clean this and clean that and do my room and fix my bed. I didn't like the fact that my mother's compensation was feeding me. I'd like the fact that she would have maybe given me some cash, but in exchange, I got a free room. I got a free meal. I got a, you know, clean house. I got love. That was my compensation for doing my job as a son. I've tried to bribe my kids these days. It doesn't work. I'll give you a 20 spot if you do this, and the crap don't work. I wish I would have done it more like my mom rather than like the way I've tried to do it.
I'm still waiting for my $100,000 I'm supposed to get with my $18,600 salary. And I wish my family had the living habits when I had $18,600.
Yeah.
You know,
and I'm not complaining.
Right.
This was what has me excited is to try and keep my values that give me joy. And for 41 years, I've seen it give joy and help players find success, not lose those values, but figure out a way to manage the new world we're in without losing those values. Can I figure it out? I got no idea, but I'm going to try my rear end off to see if I can make it work.
Right.
Yeah. Go ahead. There's, you know, I read a story about a conversation that you and Coach Calipari had, you know, where you had to kind of, he was complaining and you had to kind of calm him down about like, hey, like the coaching's a privilege and we should, you know, love it. And, you know, does that, conversations like that, are they happening a lot right now with all the added kind of responsibilities of a coach?
Yeah. I mean, the guy, you know, the our profession is no different than attorneys, doctors. You got people that don't want to color inside the lines. That you're never changing that in any walk of life. We're human beings. We choose how we want to do our jobs, whether we do it ethically or whether we color outside the lines. If we color outside the lines, those guys pretty much stay to themselves. And because they don't want people to know how they do their business. And it is what it is. I'm never mad. We're human beings, man. We make choices how we want to run our families, run our jobs. I'm not here to judge others. If they don't do their jobs ethically, they got to go home and put their heads on the pillow. They got to walk in rooms with people that know they're not ethical. And at the end of the day, if they get caught and they get boom, anyone that's a part of their organization knows what they walked into. I'm not here to judge others. But those of us that roll up our sleeves and try and do things a certain way, we try to keep each other off the ledge. Izzo and I were on the phone about 4 nights ago. I'm getting old, man. Like the days just kind of all lumping. But I think it was 3 or 4 nights ago. We were on the phone and we both agreed. You know, the easy thing right now is to walk away. But this business, the world of education, of helping young people, has been too powerful for me. Not my salary. The experience of getting out of bed and watching guys that I coached, they're all on my staff now. Everyone on my staff played for me. And to see who they are as men, as coaches, as professionals, as parents, as husbands, man, that's what gets me going. It's not my money. All you got to do is Google me, and my life's an open book. You know everything I've done. But to make $2 so I can pay a bill. But Izzo and I were talking off the – you know, we spoke each other off the ledge, and he was right. We're both in too deep to do the easy thing, which is walk away right now. Let's go down. We've been fighting since the day we started. Let's go. If we don't make it, let's not make it. But let's keep fighting for what we believe in, which is success. And success is not necessarily securing the bag. Success is being able to get out of bed and walking in a room and having respect. And we've lost sight of that and instilling that in young people. In exchange for a bag, that bag comes and goes, man. You don't walk in a room. When you walk in a room, whether you're worth $1 billion or you're worth 2 pennies, you don't get respected differently. Everyone views you for who you are, and we've lost sight of that.
Yeah. So, Coach, you had an interesting year. You guys finished 20-11 this year, and you guys were a couple stops, couple baskets for having even like a really dominant year. Lost by 1 point to St. Joseph's. Same with Loyola. Lost by 4 Dayton. You know, before we would probably ask a couple years ago, you got this whole team coming back. What are you looking forward to next year? But I guess what is next year kind of showing right now?
I'm super excited. I mean, we've got a core of guys that are in place, that aren't going anywhere, that are all in. And I'm super excited because of the sacrifices of this past year's team. Recruiting is a little easier. Recruiting's never easy, but recruiting's a little easier because it's been shown that we can become good again as a program. I'm really excited. As long as I go back to my grandmother, I ain't mad at people that want to. My wife said no to me 7 times, and I continued to fight until the day she said yes. And 20 years later, she's really happily married, and so am I.
But just wait a second, Coach. I read somewhere that she actually watched videotape of you coaching.
Stop. Like that. You see that? That is, we worked at the same school. She came right to the university.
I heard she missed your first game that you invited her to.
That's true. We're at BU. We just went out on our first date, and we're playing Northeastern's playing at Boston University. And I left tickets for her, and the game was sold out, and BU wouldn't give her tickets. So I'm looking for her. I'm like, and the game's getting ready to start. I'm looking at all our tickets. I'm like, where the hell is she at? Man, she ain't coming. God, dog, I must have made a bad impression. I can't. So the game ends. I call her, and she's like, yeah, they wouldn't let me in. I'm like, what? What do you mean they wouldn't let you in? I'm losing my mind. I wanted to go fight everyone at BU that day. I was like, yeah. Oh man, that's a true story. But she said no to me 7 times, and I say that jokingly, but it's true.
And, seven times?
Seven. And eventually she said yes. And when she said yes, we ended up fighting for a relationship that was more than just the physical attraction. It became real. And I tell players all the time, it's real easy to get married. It's really hard to stay married. And but during that journey, if she had told me, like, yo, Frank, like, you're not as good looking or you're not as a nice a human being as I thought when we started this, I need to go find someone else, I'd be like, all right, I'll go find someone else too. Let's go. it's the same way right now. The guys that think there's something better for them out there, I ain't mad at them. But if I'm not the sexy dude, that hunk of a man that I used to be, how about that? Like, come on. Like, really? Look, you just call me Seth Greenberg. Like, you damaged my ego. I was feeling real good about myself when I got my workout in this morning, and you just called me Seth.
Coach, if you feel any better, he's not coaching, you are. So that should build your ego up.
It's just not saying. Our profession. It's our looks. I mean, I look at him on TV, I'm like, man, he looks awful. No, I'm like, you called me Seth Greenberg. No, he's a friend. I say that joke.
That's funny.
No, but at the end, you know, when you walk away from something real with the hopes that there's something better, I get back to my earlier point. If it's based on a relationship, you tend to stay there and fight for what you know is right. When it's a transaction, you get sold. And it's easy. It's easy to get married. All I got to do is offer you a scholarship, and all it takes is for you to say yes. So you say no, okay, I'll offer it to someone else. Eventually, someone's going to say yes. But once we sign up for that marriage, now here comes the trials and tribulations. And if it was transactional to start, then we're getting divorced as fast as we can. But when it's substantial and it's about realness, you see, I run our program, and I'm going to get a little deep on you here because it's how I live life. It starts with honesty. If you can get through honesty, then you get the trust. If you can get through trust, then you can get the loyalty. And if you get through loyalty, then and only then you get the love. And when you get love, then you fight, man. Then you fight to sustain the storms. You fight to keep your foundation in place. Storms are coming, man. The windows, the shingles, all that stuff's getting knocked out. But the foundation of your home stands strong. And the only way to hold that foundation is through love. So the guys that are here in our program right now, we've created love. And we're not leaving for a couple dollars. Rasul Diggins isn't running away from here with the hopes of making more money. Rasul Diggins and his family believe in who we are and believe that another year in what we do is going to take him from being the most improved player in the league to a first-team all-league player that can maybe help us go. We went from the worst team in the league, the fourth. Now it's like losing weight. If I want to lose 10 pounds, I just got to stop eating chocolate chip cookies at night. They're gone. The next 10 pounds, well, now I got to sacrifice something else. It gets harder. And if I want to lose another 10 pounds, then it gets really hard. Well, Rasul is ready to take on the responsibility to take us from 4-1. It's hard. There's no guarantee, but it's going to take a lot more work and a lot more sacrifice than it did for going from last to fourth.
Rasul's a stud. Like, I mean, it was so fun to watch him come into his own this past year. And it was like his confidence and his basketball IQ just skyrocketed. And when I feel like those two things happen at the same time, like it was really impressive to watch. I mean, especially that last game against VCU when he put up 21 points, and he just seemed like he came into his own towards the end of the season.
You know, these kids live and die by today's music. Mm-hmm. You know, like I had an old coach tell me one time, they can't remember a single word in their history class, but they know the lyric to every single song. I was like, wow, that's real. But I think it was Biggie that said, more money, more problems. You know, and money don't bring you joy, man. It might help you resolve some problems, but you end up with a whole lot of other problems that you didn't have if you didn't make money.
That's why I'm still making 18.6, baby. Less money, less problems.
I'd be okay making my last year as a school teacher, it was 32.6, 32.7, I want to say. Mm-hmm. And my coaching salary was $1,780. So combined, I made $35,000. And I was okay living on that salary. It was those five different math classes a day that just beat me up. And mm-hmm. and it was, and this is the truth. This was 1998, 99. We were losing the value of the classroom, of the respect towards the teacher. I was really struggling with that moment. And it was in the same neighborhood at my high school, same neighborhood I attended. And we started losing sight of that value and respect. And that's I wasn't chasing a college coaching career. I had gotten frustrated with being a high school teacher, which is all I ever wanted to do. So I ran away from that profession to try and enter a different profession. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty wild. LT, it's pretty wild. Like the coach, some of the coaches we've spoken to recently, like the background is them starting in high school, right? And it seems like there's like this, and you had three coaches in the Final Four who were all coaching high school 10, 11 years ago. And it was like, it seems like when you have that high school coaching background, there's a different connection with some of these players that you're able to kind of bring into the college atmosphere. So it's been fun to kind of see that.
Yeah, absolutely. Sam, I think we're ready for him.
Yeah, let's do it. So, Coach, what we do is we do a little segment here. It's, you know, supposed to be 1 or 2 minutes. Sometimes it goes a little longer, but LT is going to fire off a few questions for you. First thing that comes to mind, just let it rip.
This is where I get myself in trouble.
Absolutely. Okay, which current head coach would you lose a fight against?
Konzo Martin.
Ooh. Oh,
recently hired.
Calipari or Chaney in a wrestling match?
Chaney.
He was a badass, man.
Chaney. Like, come on. Like, come on. They were both my friends. Obviously, Coach ain't with us anymore, but yeah, stop. Right. Like, did you see Cal in that video when Chaney came running and said, "Oh, kick your ass"? Cal was like, yo, grabbing people, putting them in front of him to make believe that they were holding him back. I was like,
okay, we know who your greatest recruiting win was, your wife. But as a for a player, who was your greatest recruiting win and also funniest recruiting story?
Wow. The funniest is that's too long for that 30-second answer. my greatest recruiting win. Wow. Jose Juan Barea. He was the first high profile recruit and getting him to come to Northeastern. That was a challenge to sell him on Northeastern, on Boston, a Puerto Rican kid living in Miami, nothing to do with cold air. So I would say that was my first, which, you know, it's crazy because after that people said, man, Frank's a hell of a recruiter. Man, I hate recruiting. I love building relationships. I hate recruiting because recruiting always, there's always a phoniness in the middle of recruiting. But I love conversations to get to know people. But I would say Jose Juan, the funniest. Okay, I'll give you one. I was just with him. He's coaching now. Curtis Kelly transfers from UConn, is visiting K-State. I'm on my deck on the grill, my backyard. And him and his dad were in town on the visit. And, you know, I'm on the deck. I'm on the grill. I'm cooking. I love to cook, man. I like, boom, I'm getting it done. And I keep hearing bloop, bloop. I'm looking around like, man, what is going on? Like, what is that noise? Bloop. So I kind of look behind the grill over my deck. And Kurt and his dad, I had built a little pond, like, right adjacent to my house. And I stocked, my kids were real young at the time. I had stocked it with goldfish. They were throwing rocks trying to kill my goldfish. I'm like, yo, what are you guys doing? Like, we're trying to hit the fish. I'm like, dude, those are my kids' fish. What are you like? Kurt ended up coming, and we're just at the final four laughing about that one.
Oh my God.
That's great.
That's awesome. If you, this is Sam. I haven't asked this yet, so this is the first time. This is a Sam question. If, I don't know if I'm going to ask this. If you were a candle, what scent would you be?
Can you tell by my hat? Lavender. How about that one? There
you go. Putting people to sleep.
Lavender. I get you to relax. I soothe your soul, baby.
One word to describe Frank Martin.
Loyal.
What would your wife or kid say?
Cares.
Nice. Okay. Nice. Frank Martin's all-time starting five.
Guys that played for me?
Yep.
Or just in general?
Yep. High school or college.
Guys who played for you. And you're allowed to go back to high school too, because you had some pretty big guys played for you in high school.
You put me on it, man. It's 41 years, man. And I've been privy to be around some incredible dudes. Give me seven. Can I give?
Here's the thing. I asked Chauncey Billups, his starting five, and he gave me like six names. So
cool. you can have seven.
Like here's the problem. When you put me on the spot like that, I got a guy on my staff, Doug Edwards, was a lottery pick in the NBA draft. Played at Florida State.
Okay? Yeah, Douglas Edwards. Yeah.
Okay, so Doug was incredible basketball player. How do you leave a lottery pick out? Mike Beasley, best statistic one and done season in the history of college basketball. And again, second pick of the draft. How do you leave him out? And he was player of the year in the Big 12. Jacob Pullen, player of the year in the Big 12. How do you leave him out?
You're at three, coach.
Leading scorer in the history of the school. Sindarius Thornwell leads us to a Final Four. And by the way, the one common theme all these kids have, all these guys I'm telling you about, they all won. None of them played on bad teams. Their teams all won. Sindarius Thornwell, second leading scorer in the history of South Carolina, player of the year in the SEC. Chris Silva, repeat first team all-league player, defensive player of the year in the SEC. You put me on the spot here. Denny Clemente, that was my dude, man. That was the engine that ran that team that went to the Elite Eight at K-State and set a school record for wins. It's Rodney Magruder, unbelievable. I'm just throwing names out there of different guys that when you say that to me, it's hard for me to circle five guys. Bill Walker, McDonald All-American that went on and played 6-7 years in the NBA.
That's eight, coach. You're good.
It's Barea. I just told you Barea. Steve Blake, Udonis Haslam. I haven't even mentioned them because they played for me in high school.
11. You got it. Well, you might not have a starting five, but at least you have a squad.
He's got a full team.
That's
what happens when you've been doing this for four decades.
I have one of these young media guys. Yeah. I can't remember what it was. It was a South Carolina. It wasn't here. Said, you're not worried about your old fashioned ways don't work. I said, I don't know. I think about a lot of things. I said, but I can tell you what's never happened to me. I've never looked over my shoulder to the bench and seen seats. I've always seen players. So somehow, some way, there's always enough guys who want to play for me. So it's
All right. I don't know. Two last questions. Yeah. These ones should be really easy. Okay. If they did a movie on your life, who would play you? Hollywood movie about you. Who would play you?
De Niro.
Oh, that's good. That's cold, man. That's good.
De Niro and the actor De Niro. Like the roles. I don't know him as a person. I don't know who he is as a human.
That's okay.
But the roles that he plays as an actor.
Yeah, I could see that. The song that best describes you.
Sinatra, My Way. That's a layup. That's
a good one.
And not the Elvis Presley version, the Sinatra version.
So we've asked that question to dozens of coaches, and I've always been waiting for that answer because it does seem like a coach's song, you know.
You listen to the lyrics, it tells you who Sinatra was, and he's telling you, I'm at peace with all my good and bad.
Yep.
That I don't have to apologize because I've never done wrong by nobody. I'm proud of who I am, and I'm the same way.
Yeah,
love it.
You won nothing. You got nothing. You probably pissed off about, 41 years, 12 players, a team. Probably pissed off about 500 players, but whatever.
No, we appreciate you having joining us on the podcast, Coach. We're going to kind of turn it over to you last minute. If there's anything you want to share to kind of the UMass fan base, you know, your loyal followers over the years, anything that you're working on over the off season to kind of put this team together.
I'm excited, man. I wouldn't have taken this job 2 years ago if the administration, the leadership of the school didn't want this to be good again. If I just wanted the coach to say I was coaching, I would have moved back to Florida and gotten back to high school and just dealt with that. I came here for 18 years. I was chasing Kentucky and Kansas. Those are the two schools I've been chasing for 18 years. I didn't want to take a job to just take a job. I wanted to continue to chase those kind of schools. This school's committed to it. We're taking steps in that direction. Can we ever get it there? I don't know, but you know what? We're either going to get there or they're going to put me in one of those white jackets. It's got all kinds of sleeves and they kind of tie you up and ship me away and no one will ever hear from me again. Those are the only two options. And, we're going to figure it out. And by the way, I don't go down easy. So it's going to be hard to put me in that jacket. So we're going to figure it out.
Coach, man, that's awesome. You're going to stick with us for 1 second. But yeah, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. I mean, this is I feel like we could talk with Coach Martin for like 17 hours. Follow UMass. And I'm actually kind of excited that you guys are moving to the MAC. I'll be able to see. I'm in Akron, Ohio. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. And keep following us and watch us on the Full Court Press Podcast, A College Basketball Podcast.